Welcome everyone to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Coulter. With me I have Mike Zeppel. Welcome, Mike.
Robbie, good to be here.
Excellent. Always good to have you. We are into week two, Shula Free, and we're still tracking along okay so far. Listenership was up last week, the highest reviewed episode we've actually had. Nothing to do with Dr. Adam Gorman, I'm led to believe, but more to do with the fact that people are rapt.
Absolutely.
No, Justin.
Up 23%, they told us, Robbie.
Excellent. I like that. Same as we do every week. If you can subscribe to the podcast, that would be fantastic. You can grab it on iTunes and Spotify. Please do like, leave a review, share where you can as well. That would be fantastic. If you guys could make up for Zeppel not being active on social media, we'd really appreciate that.
It's a small void to fill, Robbie.
Not a massive one at all. So we've... As always, a lot of chat around the office this week. We are getting into the time of year where finals are starting to kick off for a lot of people. And with finals, obviously, season ends. Season begins coming up fairly soon with trials. And a lot of discussion around the office of building the perfect athlete.
It's been good, Robbie. We've been talking, and we do this from time to time. We get nothing done on a Monday morning when we come in here. And we talk about all kinds of random things from the weekend. And kind of the topic this weekend and that's driven a lot of our conversation is like... You know, not only our athletes, but when we're watching basketball, like what does the perfect athlete look like? And what do people look for in an athlete? What makes an athlete that really good, that eye-catching athlete that we see out there? And we've had some interesting talk this week, Rob.
We have, and, you know, it's tough. Let's face it. Like, it's going to be different. The obvious answer is your perfect athlete looks like LeBron James.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, ticks a lot of the boxes, no question, but what are the sort of the traits that make up that perfect athlete as well? So we've got a list of seven and a bit, I suppose, if you want to look at it that way, of just what we believe would be if we had a perfect world and we could just mash players together, and we hear it all the time. Coaches sit there and said, hey, if I could just combine this player with that player, I'd have the ultimate point guard. We hear it a lot. So we're working on the theory that we can do that. And we're going to try and build the perfect basketball player. And hopefully this might
give a little bit of indication. Look
like you, Robbie. Won't look anything like me. This will look like not even the perfect podcaster would be my track on that. So we'll have a couple of ideas on what we believe is the right way to go, but we'll see how it plays out. So before we start, probably the most important thing out of that is identifying them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll talk about... this is a Victorian podcast, Robbie. We're shamelessly Victorian. And so we'll call it the perfect Victorian athlete.
Perfect Victorian athlete. Yep.
Talent ID is the big one.
Yep.
I do think in our roles, my role here in our state and the folks around the country who have a similar role, talent identification sets the table for everything. And there is really a duty, not just on... us as a state, but people out there in the basketball community. And I do think, and I really do appreciate it, the folks in Melbourne, across Victoria, that do text me weekly about an athlete that they might see playing in a domestic competition who is 6'6", doesn't look like they've played much basketball, somebody who they may see playing school basketball, someone on a random Friday night playing at 9:40. I do get them, and it is really, really good stuff. Talent identification is big for us, for our country. As well.
So when we start talking talent ID, what are the things that stand out probably before you've even seen them play? Like we all sort of say it, you can just see they walk like a basketball or they look like a basketball. What are some of the things that before they even hit the court that you can pick out straight away?
The eye test, Robbie, the eye test. Now there's a field of scientific study, just bear with me, Robbie, it's called anthropometric measurements. Are you across that, mate? Is that what your degree is in?
You know why I know that? Why? Because you spent 6 minutes trying to pronounce that before we even tried to record this podcast. So I'm very well across the anthros, as we in the business call
the anthros. But that's essentially the measurements and proportions of the human body. So that is the eye test. They do get our athletes in Victoria, our top tier athletes do get their anthros taken at least once, probably more than once a year if they do go to national team camps of the sort. So we do keep a collection of anthros and are able to track and measure that across the span of an athlete's time in the pathway. Some really interesting publications out there around prototypical measurements for across all different sports. Rowing is a really interesting one. So if you think about rowing, I've heard that in regard to their talent identification here in Australia, if you have not got an X wingspan or arm length, and if you are not, you know, a Y measurement across the shoulders, you're essentially eliminated from their pathway, which I think is interesting, Robbie, and you wanted to bring that in with basketball. I've had to put that on the back burners, Rob. We can't do that.
Robbie. I'm a big fan. We should be risk scanning athletes fairly early on and just sort of find out. I don't know AFL do it. They're pretty big on knowing how big the athletes are. And it doesn't mean that we don't work with those of lesser stature by any means. Like, it's talent is talent.
Well, I got a little story. Story time. Uncle Mike's story time here, Robbie. Spoke with a group of Chinese high-performance coaches. My Chinese isn't good. I had a translator with me, Robbie. This was probably 12 months ago. Dr. Julia Walsh organized it, and she had about 30 coaches in town from China observing different things at Deakin University and organizations around Melbourne. She asked me to have a chat with those folks. So we had about a 45-minute talk around high-performance here in Melbourne, Australia basketball, and then there was a bit of question and answer time, and it went like this. The first question, when question time opened up, was a gentleman who asked, at what age here in Melbourne do we risk scan our athletes? So if we've identified somebody as being a potential boomer or opal, at what age do we risk scan them? I kind of laughed it off and said, no, it doesn't really happen, mate. We kind of just look at the parents walk into camp, and if the parents look tall, then the athlete, hopefully, fingers crossed, will be tall in the future. There's a bit of a laugher in the room. Good stuff. Next question. Comes back to this same guy about 15 minutes later, and he essentially says, now, seriously, at what age do you guys risk scan your best athletes here in Melbourne? And the translator translates to me, and I start asking questions of him through the translator to this gentleman, like, what age do you guys in China risk scan your athletes that you observe and are projected to be Olympians or world champions? And the story that he put forth was, if you are an elite, like a identified Olympian athlete in China, risk scan for boys at the age of 11, girls at the age of 13, and there's a 90% success rate that they have, and they track it, and if that's where their identification process either starts or stops for a lot of these athletes as well.
Well, it would have helped my career significantly. I was pretty much this height at under 12s and didn't change a great deal. So that little drop step baseline baby hook not have been the skill set I necessarily needed to work on for my long-term basketball career.
Now, I played a bit of footy as a junior as well, and I did, through the AFL channels and through the TAC Cup, was invited to partake in a physical test, which also had a wrist scan attached to it. So that would have been, I would have been under 16s footy back into my footy playing career. So that's like 2001. The AFL was already wrist scanning its athletes to identify draft camps and things like that.
Yep, absolutely. So probably an easy area for people. We do have some basketballs that do that, and it's usually when they've broken their wrist or something like that, or they have to go and see a doctor and they say, hey, look, we just need to know, potentially, is there any point plating this? Do we just let it go? Yep. And things like that. But it is incredibly accurate that we've sort of found that the people have sent the information through on. It's a really
mine
big
was
one.
Spot on, and I'm still not happy about it, Robbie.
Yeah, well, you know, we can probably get your game somewhere in the AFL at this point if we need to. Probably the other part that, before anything else, is lineage, genetic makeup. Like, it's there's a reason. You know, Dante Exum, Ben Simmons, these
Bolden,
sorts of guys,
Jonah Bolden.
There's a chain there.
There is something something to it, Robbie, and I think it's really, really important. Won't exclude other kids from a pathway or other athletes from a pathway, but G. Ablett is G. Ablett because of G. Ablett. There's the Danaher's. You'll see it through all sports. Yep. AFL. It'd be interesting starting to see how many Olympians are the sons or daughters of previous Olympians, because there is something to it. Lineage is hereditary.
Yep, absolutely. So there are a couple of things you probably obviously take into account with talent ID before we even kick off. But
closer to home. Like, we're looking at our under 17 girls that just got back from, there was a heel.
Yep.
There was an Anstey.
There was.
Like, these things are.
Yeah, it does go full circle. And it's not a hard and fast rule. I mean, some of those kids will be elite in their own personal lives, but not necessarily at sport. Yep. You know, they might be outstanding students or whatever the case may be, but there is certainly a bit of a history there as well, I suppose. So we've hit on seven areas that we think kind of make up the perfect basketball player. And if we could get these seven traits into our athletes, we feel like we'd end up being sports agents, and we'd corner the market effectively between the two of us.
Absolutely.
Probably the first one we've kicked off with, and it translates a little bit from the anthros, you know, for those in the industry, again. Athleticism. Like, you have to be a good athlete to be a basketballer.
Really important. Really important. And I guess we can kind of set the table with this, that at the age of 14, like our under 14 kids in Melbourne, will not have all seven of these things.
Nope.
And does that mean that you are excluded from a pathway or a chance to be a Boomer Opal Pro D1 player, NBLW? No, not at all. These are the values or the traits that I think if you've got a scout, an international scout or a professional scout or a talent identifier looking at a basketball player, they're kind of looking into these seven areas as to which boxes do they tick, which ones can we help if we get them into our program. And they will have all kinds of formulas and things to figure out exactly how much they would need to essentially have the tick ahead to say that this athlete has a chance. So athletic ability, yeah, straight on from talent ID, athletic ability, it does matter.
Yep.
It does matter. Basketball is a game that's played in short, sharp bursts, verticality, lateral quickness. They really, really matter. The good thing with that is that it can be developed.
Yep.
It can be developed.
No question.
There is the genes. Like, if your dad and mum are really good athletes, good chance you're going to be a really good athlete too. But there is an element of strength and conditioning, body maintenance, injury prevention that will help you become a pretty good athlete.
Injury prevention is one that we probably don't pay enough attention to, I think, when we talk about a really good athlete. The really good athletes are the ones that are able to stay on the floor.
Availability, yeah.
Like, you have to be able to do things. Like, I know a lot of the questions we get asked are, when can I start my child lifting? Like, when should they be doing a weights program?
Yeah.
Really, it might be a little over the top when we're talking about under 12 and under 14 athletes and things like that, but there's no reason they can't start getting their core sorted. So that might be just stretching, Pilates, things like that, balance. Basic body movement. You know, there's the story about James Heard being a ballerina as a young athlete.
Essendon Football Club, interesting.
Essendon Football Club. He was
that
very
doesn't
good.
Surprise me at all, Rob.
Yeah, that's fine. You can mock away, Mocky. Ultimately, his balance, and you watch the way he moves, was fantastic. And you see a lot of the basketballers go and play AFL, and they're in stance. They move laterally really well. They do have great athleticism and awareness. Like, it is, they understand how to play. So athleticism is a key trait. The ability to play above the rim, in the male side of the game, obviously, is a big one, and it's slowly coming into the women's side as well. Like, we saw it at the Junior NBA World Champs. One of the ladies from the American team threw down on the break, which was massive. So athleticism is really becoming a big thing, and it's, as you say, it's those short, sharp bursts. It's the ability to go and contest a shot, get down, then get back up again and contest another shot, or go get a box out and then go and get another closeout. Those kinds of things are really important. So when we start talking about athleticism and balance and coordination, things like agility ladders are really good, I find, for getting kids to change direction. And just, if you don't have agility ladders, cones, like run around a cone, move different directions all the time. And you can incorporate those into your training sessions as well.
The best, Robbie, workout that a 15, 16, 17-year-old athlete in Victoria could do would be jump rope four or five times a week. Like, literally 2 minutes, 2 feet, 30 seconds one foot, 30 seconds the other foot, some like boxer skips. That stuff there changes everything.
It does.
It is really difficult to do. There are some studies that show like 5 minutes of jumping rope is the equivalent of running for 30 minutes aerobically. It's really, really tough. Helps your feet a lot. And basketball is played from the floor up. So if you can't get your feet right, you will be eliminated from the rest of this list that we have got here, because it is really, really important.
And I was just talking to a coach earlier this week who's just started skipping again, and big shout out to Ash Arnott, because we're talking about athleticism. And when I think athleticism, Ash is unequivocally the first person I think of who's just started skipping again, and he said the same thing.
Oh, it's the best, mate. It's the best. And so we talk about balance as well. Just 1 foot for 30 seconds is harder than you think. If you think you can get that, 1 foot for 20 seconds with your eyes closed will really, really challenge you. These are little things that you would incorporate in a warm-up. Like for your team at a practice, I got a chance to watch St. Mary's play, LMU when they were in town play. Their athletes pre-game are doing so much proprioception work, standing on little mini BOSUs, BOSU balls, just challenging the flexion of the ankles, balance. There's ropes, jump rope. There's the bands to help you sit in the stance and stretch. Like, these are just little things that help you maintain that strength. But the other part of it is having a body that is somewhat pliable as well. Like, our game's a weird one in that it's awkward, that you get in awkward angles. You've got to cut. You got to get your shoulder to somebody's hip to get through screens. Like, having a pliable body that can go through all of this is really important as well. And you won't get to the point where you can really start to move weight until you are able to challenge your own body weight.
Yep.
And it was the one thing when I went over to the States to play for the first time, I thought my skill set was pretty good, competitiveness was pretty good, could shoot the ball okay. I was 18 months behind strength and conditioning, and to the point where our head strength coach, who was a Jet, he's the head women's basketball coach now at Notre Dame, he did not let any of us freshmen use weight for like 6 weeks. And he just challenged us on balance, core, stability, all those little things add up. So, mate, got over there and could hardly do one pull-up or chin-up. And if you can't move your own body weight, or if you can't control your own body weight, the athletic ability, like the NBA athletic ability, you got no chance.
No, it makes perfect sense. So we've given a couple of NBL, WNBL comparisons for this as well. So,
who's the best athlete in the NBL? Who you got, Robbie?
I think Nathan Sobey. Like, you watch how he moves. Like, he is quick in straight lines, laterally as well, gets up real quick as well, challenges shots at the rim.
Yep.
I think he's an outstanding athlete.
Really good.
Born and ball boy as well.
Really good.
So, again, all about the Victorian athlete.
Absolutely. Really good.
I think he's a great example.
And that's why he's been able to go and compete in summer leagues, internationally now for the Boomers. And really, his athleticism is a point of difference for him.
Yep, absolutely. And WNBL, we've got Ezzie Magbeger, one of the up-and-coming stars of the WNBL, just been named in the Opals team for the World Cup later this year as well. Phenomenal athlete, laterally, straight up and down as well. Like, she's grabbing onto the ring and things like that. Like, it's great athlete.
I asked you before when we were doing... We did some prep for this podcast, believe it or not.
And since Shula's gone, we've got a little bit more professional.
In the prep, I asked you, like... Because I had never coached Ezzy on the floor, and you've been with her this past Siebel year. I asked, like, is she a really good athlete, or is she just really gifted in terms of her body type? And you were like, she does one or two things a night where you are just completely dumbfounded with how did she actually get there that quick, that agile at her size.
And I never saw that in my junior career, obviously, so I'm dumbfounded a lot by a lot of different things that happen. So number two, multi-skilled. Athletes have got to be multi-skilled at playing multiple positions, multiple different ways for different coaches. If you are not a skilled athlete, you will struggle to play anywhere, let alone internationally, which is ultimately where we want our athletes to go and be able to play.
Interesting, Robbie. Interesting. An international skill set is how it's kind of referred to in basketball quarters here in our country. And that's two sides of the ball. There's the offensive and the defensive side. Offensively, we're talking about being multi-skilled. So I use the term dexterity a lot. Like, you've got to be able to pass with both hands, pivot off both feet. Like, that's elementary. And that's something that really from day dot I'd be working on with athletes. And if you came to one of our one of our sessions like tonight, where we'll have nationally identified athletes on the floor, they will spend the first 4 minutes working on pivots and passes. And it's just a good habit for them to have, no matter who or where you play for. Internationally, you want to be a great pivoter and have great dexterity with both hands. We talk about, we'll get to shot mechanics. That falls into that international skill set as well. Had a conversation with a coach around his team, their progression through the years. Done an outstanding job with his junior boys. He told the story about his under 14. He's got a tall kid in his team who at the start of the year essentially caught the ball and did not know what to do with it. And he kind of asked the kid, like, what's the deal? And the kid told him, like, I've never played with the ball in my hands. Like, he's played rep for a couple of years now, but he caught the ball in the perimeter and just kind of looked at the ball like, what do you want me to do with this? And so he spent the year kind of getting him upskilled into passing from the top, passing and screening away, catching and pivoting from the top. So the international, when we talk about international skill set, that is your ability to play out of all the spots on the floor with both feet and both hands and able to make plays.
And that starts at a young age too. That's not something that you can just pick up in 16s and all of a sudden run with it. Like, we've got to do a better job 10s, 12s, 14s coaches are getting this stuff in order early. Like the more that athletes can play with the ball in their hand, the better. So that goes to your training sessions. Are you playing a lot of 5-on-0, in which case there's only one person that's got the ball in their hands at any given time? And really, the other 9 athletes on your team might stand around and do not a lot.
Yep.
So can you do breakdowns where it's 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, put them in different situations where they actually need to think a little bit? They need to perform skills with defense. So it's not just a muscle memory thing. It's now I need to read what the defense is doing, and that way they can incorporate that into their skill set and their basic body movement patterns as well. It's not enough to just sit there and go, hey, we'll just scrimmage. There's got to be a few rules around it. And, you know, Lono spoke about it at his clinic on Monday night as well, just making sure your athletes are multi-skilled so that they can play and make reads within the game as well.
Body movement patterns, Robbie. You're starting to sound a little bit like me. I love that. If you're out there and you're trying to think, what does a picture of this multi-skilled international athlete look like, go to YouTube and type in the Euro Under-18s tournament. So the Euro Under-18s, that just finished in, where was it, Robbie? Latvia, that's where it was. It was in Latvia, and they made the final. And watched some of those games.
Yep.
And the size of the athlete, their ability to play facing the basket, their ability to go from facing the basket to play and play and then get to the post, to shoot from all 5 positions, to pass with both hands, pivot off both feet. There are some unbelievably good games from that tournament. So the Latvian Under-18... boys ended up making the final from 4th seed. Played Serbia, won the comp. But if you want to see some international skill sets, definitely have a look.
Yep. So, again, our comparison in the NBL, Cam Glidden was one of yours. You're a big fan of his skill set. And from the WNBL, Steph Blikavs, or Cumming as she used to be, obviously. Both incredibly good athletes, can both carry the ball, can both put it on the floor under pressure, can score from the perimeter, can score inside as well. Like they are just, on the offensive end, immensely talented, can both guard bigger on the defensive end, can both guard guards on the defensive end. Like they're probably the prototypes we look at in Australian basketball.
Yeah, international skill sets, absolutely. Their ability to get the ball down the floor when they need to, so they're not just having to find the point guard and then hand the ball off. They can get the ball up the floor. Both tremendous passers, see the whole floor, can play with their heads up, both sides of the body. I think they're two athletes where if you're trying to get your kids to see what you would like in an international athlete one day, I'd be having a good look at them in the NBL and WNBL seasons, which is not far away, Robbie.
Very, very close. Hey,
how's about these, Robbie? I'm just I got some more information for you on international skill set. Playing without fouling is a skill, okay? Cannot play and foul and sit on the bench because you're no good on the bench, Robbie.
I was better on the bench than on court.
I know, Robbie, but we're not talking about you right now. The last one is ball screen and dribble handoff offense. So it is so prevalent in the international game, the ability to play in and out of pick and roll or ball screen offense and the ability to put the ball on the floor and dribble handoff with a teammate. Those two things there make up international basketball. And if you had to count how many ball screens per game, it would be in the hundreds, combining both teams. So when we talk about all these skills, playing off both feet, pivoting off both feet, with passing with both hands, in and out of pick and roll and in and out of dribble handoffs, really, really important.
It is. But is it as important as number 3, which is your favourite topic, shooting? So, Robbie, shooting is huge. Like, we know you don't get picked if you can't shoot the ball. You tried to take that as far as you could as a junior and did nothing but shoot the ball. But it is an incredibly important skill set. Like, we see the how the game is changing with stretch fours now.
Yep.
If you're a point guard but you can't shoot it, everyone just goes under your on ball anyway, so it doesn't matter at all to you. The game is changing. If you can't shoot it, you can't play.
It's interesting, Robbie. Stretch four, I heard this... or read it maybe during the week. Like, stretch four is now a given.
Yeah.
Like, is anyone playing a four out there internationally that can't shoot anymore? Like, is that even... I don't even think it's happening anymore.
Yep.
So stretch four is now a given. So you now got a four who can always shoot, which when, you know, 10 years ago, I remember talking with coaches in the US, like, if you had a four that could shoot, that was like a point of difference for your team. All fours now are identified to shoot. It's now you're talking about, do we have a stretch five? Do we have a five that can shoot? So that's the discussion now. I think it's gone away from whether the four can shoot. I think it's like, can we get a five that can also bang, rebound, defend the rim, and shoot the ball?
I remember that's... seeing once that stretch four used to be code for non-rebounding big.
I love it.
That used to play away from the rim.
Sure.
Yeah, not sure. Non-rebounding sounds right. I don't know about the big. But shooting is a key that needs to be taught at the young level. So when we start talking about training sessions and how we actually get this back, and we've talked about shooting plenty of times on the podcast as well, but there needs to be an element of shooting in every training session. There needs to be a culture driven throughout our kids that, hey, you can go and get extra work in by yourself. You can't always play one-on-one because you may not have a defender that wants to play with or against you or anything like that, but you can always shoot by yourself. And the muscle memory and the form shooting and those sorts of things can be done one-on-zero just to get it right.
Yeah, absolutely. And shooting, I've probably said this 50 times already on the pod, shooting is a time-intensive endeavor. Like, it actually takes time to be a really, really good shooter. You have to invest time and energy and effort into being a good shooter. For our athletes that want to be good shooters, it means, like, Saturday morning, instead of your alarm going off at 9 a.m., it goes off at 8 and you go outside and you shoot for 40 minutes or you shoot for 30 minutes, whatever it is, because it very much is a repetition-driven thing for you to get a technique that will be able to stand up. So I think that's the first part, like shooting techniques. The demand on our athletes here in Melbourne is that you have to be able to shoot the ball. Like, I don't like going out and watching our athletes barge down, driving into the lane, throwing up shots, like, especially if they've passed up an open shot. Your ability to shoot the ball will put you in conversations all the time.
Yep. And so the one-on-0 shooting is still relevant, I think. Just get the form right. That's something that really should be done in the player's own time. Like, we don't, and I say this sort of half-jokingly, but we don't want to waste time at training sessions doing one-on-0 form shooting. That is something that really should be done by the players in their own time.
Yeah.
And coaches can recognize. And again, it's not a waste, but there's more efficient things we can do. Yeah. We want players shooting with a contest. Like contested closeouts, off a ball reversal, off the pull-up, those kinds of things as well. I mean, how many, you watch international basketball, and you spoke about it before, how many guys get open shots off flare picks?
Yep.
Like, it happens all the time, and kids can't necessarily practice that by themselves in their own time. So that's the sort of thing that we need to be doing at training sessions for them as well. So the ability to shoot the ball is key, but also the ability to finish in and around the paint with guys running at you as well. Like, it might be offhand, off foot, whatever it might be. I remember reading a book about Steve Nash way back in the day. And
read a book, Robbie?
I did. Audio book. And they were talking about how they couldn't get Nash to do layups the correct way. So inside foot, outside hand, they could not get it done. And now it's just accepted that, oh, if you can't, that's fine. Like, you've got to be able to finish off both feet, both hands along the way. It's just accepted.
Yep. Yeah, finishing ability falls into shooting ability. Absolutely. Yep. So you've got obviously your jump shot, but your ability to finish in and around the basket, inside the paint, that means that if you are a ball handling guard, having a package where off 2 feet you can finish floaters, hook shots. Obviously, you've got your vision to get the ball out there if you need to, but ability to finish is critical. On the female side, I actually do think for our athletes, it is a point of difference. Your ability to finish at the basket is something that can separate a good player from being a very good player.
Yep, absolutely. So our NBL, WNBL comparisons we've come up with here.
Who you got, Robbie?
NBL, we've gone Chris Golding.
Like it.
Certainly no doubt he can shoot it. WNBL, Matty Garrick.
Yep.
So Melbourne Boomers athlete as well.
Very good.
Has had a number of seasons up and around, you know, 40% from the three-point line, both those guys.
A lot of Victorians, or living in Victoria. Matty, last 5 or 6 seasons has been like above 35% shooting the three, and above 80% shooting the foul shot the last 3 years in the WNBL. Goulding's shot just looks really good.
It does.
Like, he has obviously put so much time into his technique, his shot-making ability. That's the other thing, your ability to actually make shots. He's put so much. You can just tell there is no way he just rolled out of bed and made shots on a Friday night at High Sense Arena or Melbourne Park. He's put so much time into that for him to be able to shoot the ball the way he does. And I hope that is something that our athletes look at. They see the end product, but understand the thousands and thousands of repetitions and hours that have gone into him by himself shooting the basketball.
Yeah, no question. So next, and again, like, it's probably undersold because it's a difficult one to teach, but IQ, like, just having smart players on the floor can make our lives significantly easier as coaches, it'd be fair to say.
Make you look better, for sure.
It certainly can get you hired and fired if you've got smart players, but player IQ lends itself to a lot of things. So there's things like vision on the floor, control, what is the right play, what is the right time to make it, where do I need to be, team rules, can they retain information as well, how many times do you bring your point guard over and say, hey, the next two possessions, this is what we're in, and by the time they run back out to tell the team, they've forgotten. It's a huge part of the game, I think.
Absolutely.
How do you teach it?
I was just about to ask you, Robbie. Decision making is kind of, we talk about IQ. What is a smart player? A smart player is somebody, he or she makes really good decisions. Is it fair to say that? I think IQ, because if I said the IQ, like, you want a smart kid, we all want smart kids. What's a smart kid do? Well, they make really good decisions. They make the game easier for the athlete next to them, so they might put them in a good position for them to have success, to make a shot. They create time and space for themselves, which ultimately creates time and space for their teammate to make an open jumper, like making good decisions. We talked about the skill set, international skill set in pick and roll. Decision making in pick and roll is something that if you watch internationally, it just blows your mind that these athletes are making decisions, and all they're doing is looking at defenders on the floor, and they know exactly where they're going to fling that ball to. Decision making defensively as well. So we talk about IQ and decision making. The hardest one, I think, to coach in juniors is overhelping. You see it a lot, that athletes will overhelp, and maybe that is a little bit coaching driven as well, because we've probably all done or been a part of 4-on-4 shell, where the ball gets driven baseline, and the coach points to the ground, the ball gets driven baseline, and then that player sprints over from the split line to cut the ball off outside the key, and then you fast forward to the game 2 days later, or on the Friday night, and the ball gets driven from the baseline, and the ball's not actually, hasn't beaten the defender, and that person sprints outside the lane, and they overhelp, and then all of a sudden the ball gets zipped around, and their player makes an open shot from the opposite corner. So overhelping is definitely a decision, or helping, full stop, is a decision. Finding your gap, or finding your position up the line, they're all IQ and decisions on the defensive floor. And the other one would be like whatever defensive transition principles, what decisions do you make in either stopping the ball, how far back do you get, how much space do you give on a closeout to an athlete registering non-shooter versus shooter versus left hand versus right hand. And these are all decisions that you can't make one on zero, which is why we obviously encourage a lot of one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three, disadvantage, advantage drills, where athletes have to continuously make these decisions, because decision making is a skill.
It is, and it has to be trained realistically. So you can do that at your training sessions, by disadvantage drills are usually the best way to do it, so that when they get into a game in that same situation, they've seen it before. Now, are they going to make the best decision every time? Probably not, but that's okay as well. Like, they just need to find a way so that they've been put in that situation before, so that when it happens again, it's this familiarity. I was listening to Reggie Miller talk about it once, and he's like,
decision to shoot.
His decision chart was fairly basic, catch it and fire that thing away.
Love that.
But it wasn't so much that he got quicker, it's that the game slowed down for him. And that's what I think the smartest players do, and the highest IQ players do, is they never seem stressed. They never seem flustered. You can run press after press at them, and they just, no worries, I'll find the open player. And it doesn't mean our open player is our five man trailing the floor, I'll throw it to them. The open player might be down the line, or they'll hold onto it for an extra dribble rather than trigger the trap.
The game slows down for the uberly skilled player as well. Because if you can handle pressure, then with a bounce, with your body position, if you can handle pressure, then the game slows down because you're not afflicted by that pressure.
Yep, no question. So
who's the high IQ players in the NBL and WNBL, Rob?
We've got Mitch McCarron.
Star.
And we've got Jennero Hay.
Yeah.
So right. I think two, and again, when you start looking at, okay, here, let's say a fourth one now, so we've gone with athleticism, multi-skilled, shooting, IQ, there's a lot of these players that will fit into more than one category, which is why they are at the point they are.
Absolutely, so, absolutely. I saw Mitch play a couple games in the last week, the St. Mary's game and LMU. His decision-making in transition is incredible. Pick-and-roll decision-making is unbelievable. He has got more than one of those things on our list, but the decisions he makes it easier for his teammates to have great influence on the game.
Yep, no question. So number five, or trait that we want to have, number five, Resilience and mental toughness.
I love it, Robbie.
So this, again, is a really hard one to train. Some players, I do believe, are actually born with this, so that they can just, they are good regardless of what they can do.
Yeah.
But this is kind of a difficult one to quantify as well. When we say shooting, we can obviously align that to stats or the athleticism. We can say, hey, they run that in this amount of time, so yeah, it's an easy one. But how do you actually define resilience and mental toughness? It's one of the hardest things. And I know coaching state teams, like that Jay Billis article on toughness, was always one that we give out to players. And I mean, the whole book's a great read as well, but just that little excerpt that you can get online pretty much anywhere.
So what is resiliency for us? What are we going to say that is? That's like responding to some form of adversity. That would be resilience. Not getting things the way you wanted them. Resilience. Injury.
And there's different ways you can look at that. Like, shooters have to be resilient. They can go 0 or 6, but if their job is to make the 7th, they have to shoot that and put out from their head the first 6. And it's that next play mentality. It's I know like a lot of the Vic Metro coaches would probably understand the 24 mentality and the next 24 and the next 24 and that live in the moment stuff that's been around forever.
Yeah.
But it's a really big thing. It's hard to build up, but you can always tell the mentally tough players are the ones that do perform when pressure comes on.
And all these great players, all those athletes that we've rattled off already, the league's full of ones that we won't mention today as well, have had to fight some form of adversity previously. And you really are not going to get to a professional level until you have that, or a high-performing level, like we talk about, you know, national team camps for our juniors as well. You will not get there without having the challenge of some form of adversity. And how you deal with that is ultimately going to define your career, but also who you are and how you respond to that. I'm proud of a lot of our athletes who have missed out on state teams in the past, to, you know, they finally do make a state team, they play well, get a chance to go to national camps, potentially play on a national team. There's a form of resiliency that comes through that. A lot of those lessons are driven within the household, Robbie, well. So and
the support network matters a lot with that resiliency too. So we talk about it a heap, I think, with just people's mental health, and we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. But the support network around the player and the coach in regard to how they deal with a setback or a little bit of adversity as well matters a lot. You need to be able to talk to people, and the message that you give back to them when they show that, hey, I'm not dealing with this all that well, can be a real defining moment. There are people that'll go the tough love approach of, hey, you know, harden up, just move on. There are people that'll sit there and listen, and everyone's a little bit different in regard to what they need as well. But how you help them through that and how you help them move on and what's next really matters a lot. So it's worth having player meetings and things like that. I mean, not overdoing it. You don't want to be meeting with them every 2 minutes. But if you know a player that's just gone through a state selection and maybe you've missed out, well, go and have a chat with them and find out where they're at. It's until you do that, you don't really know what they're going through anyway. But it might just be that chat that changes things for them. They might be ready to give the game away because they think they're not wanted as a player, and nothing could be further from the truth. You're just not right for the moment.
At this time.
The other part of resiliency may not be necessarily on the court. So no player has made every team they've ever tried out for, I would suggest. There's probably a couple, but I can't think of any off the top of my head. You know, even Jordan got cut in high school. So there's that aspect of it, but there's also dealing with injuries and setbacks because pro athletes want to play. There's no two ways about it. They want to be on court. They want to perform. That's their livelihood. That's what they've trained their whole life for. And dealing with injury and setback can be a really big thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, it would be interesting to see how these athletes that don't deal with selections well as a junior or a senior then deal with the challenge of an injury, because resiliency comes from the same store, you know? So I would hazard a guess that an athlete that does miss out on some squads, that does have some injury come to them at a later point in their life, they will be able to deal with that pretty well. But again, the support network from day dot, like, what was the support network? What messaging are they getting around their standing, whether it's in a program, whether it's their skill set, etc.?
Yep, absolutely. So two athletes we've got there, NBL, Dave Barlow, WNBL, Belinda Snell.
Incredibly resilient, both of those. Dave's had a history of injuries, playing unbelievably well right now. But at any point through this, could have put it in the too hard basket. I'm talking like at least three. I'm thinking serious knee injuries, maybe a fourth. But for him to have the frame of mind that he was going to get the best out of his ability, and he wasn't going to shortchange the process at all for him, is an unbelievable story for our young athletes to look at.
It is, and you see him at Melbourne United training now, and the amount of time and effort he put into his body to make sure that thing was right. Like, he missed an entire season of NBL, I think, coming back from Europe, and just was at every session, was always doing the stretching, was always on the roll, just got everything sorted to make sure that he gave himself the best chance to continue playing. And Belinda Snell's another great example of that. Like, missed out on an Opals, WNBL didn't look like it was going to go the way she wanted to, stuck with it, made another WNBL roster, got a title out of it, made our Opals team again, you know, successful there as well, and has only just retired. And she's been able to do it on her terms. So, again, another person that could have just said, no, this is too hard and I'm done with this, I'll let someone else make the decision for me, and went the other path of, no, no, this is my career, I'm going to decide how this ends. So,
a couple of great ones.
Great examples there.
The
next one, number six, leadership qualities. So,
love that, Robbie.
This is one, I think everyone could remember in teams they've coached over the years who their favourite leaders were and their captains were and all those sorts of things.
No favourites?
Yeah. You might have a different stance on this than me. I've certainly got my favourite captains over the years that I've enjoyed working with. But leadership is a massive quality because it's the ability to pick others up around you. It's the ability to take on extra work or extra pressure or whatever the case may be and just push on. And it ties obviously in with the resilience and the IQ and things like that. But leadership quality, how do you train that?
It's huge, mate. A question for you, without notice. I love doing this one, Robbie. Captains.
Yep.
Necessary in basketball or not?
The FIBA rules dictate that you have to have a captain and they have to start.
Would be necessary in a FIBA-sanctioned event, then, I'm sure, Robbie.
Yes. So, but I hear where you're going with it, because, I mean, we hear it a lot in the AFL, I suppose, with leadership groups, like, rather than captains. Do you need to have one person that is supposed to do more? Do natural leaders simply just stand up? Like, it's, I know we've had it on state teams. We usually have a little bit of a vote with the playing group on who they want as the captain, then the coaching staff votes, and as it turns out, the players' vote is worth one, the coaching staff's vote 100. Is worth about eight.
Good.
So ultimately, you will get who you want as captain.
Basketball's different for me. So I can see in footy, like, the value of having a captain who is that person at the centre of everything. And everything is driven from them. And you look at the great captains in footy right now. Cochin's unbelievably good captain. Selwood's been a really, really good captain. I got no idea about Essendon, but
You don't need to qualify that.
If you think
that.
About basketball, generally the player that gets the most respect out of the playing group is the best player, which is an interesting take if they're now not the captain and the message is coming or something's driven from the captain. So I just think within basketball, like, captaincy is a dangerous one in terms of where do they sit within your program. You can still have them, but I just think it's an interesting one in terms of, you know, where they sit in programming. Leadership is really, really tough, Robbie. I've spent the last better of 10 years, I guess, studying leadership. Did my master's in leadership, and there's nothing for me, and I'm a little bit of a geek with this stuff, there's nothing cooler for me than when I watch something or read something from a great leader. And I know there's a community out there that passes on different books and articles, and you send stuff to me and we're like, this is unbelievable. We read a really, really good one. The Spanish national team head coach sent one out, or wrote an article recently that we read and had a look at and printed it off. It was awesome. It just exuded leadership. Can it be taught? I don't know. I really don't know. I think it's very much a product of the environment maybe that you come from. You can definitely pick up different techniques and things like that, and there's a million leadership books out there written by a million different people. But whether or not it is like an inherent trait, I'm closer to leaning towards that, which would kind of back up the fact that there probably isn't a ton of good leaders out there playing.
No question. I don't think it's something you can force on anyone either. I think you either are or you aren't. Right. I know some of the years we've had captains, we've actually said, if you don't want to be the captain here, whack your paw up and let us know. Yep. And there have been kids that have removed themselves from it. They're like, hey, I've got enough problems getting my stuff sorted, let alone trying to get everyone else up for it as well. So I do think that vice captains are the most overrated title
the VC.
Ever. ever. Like, I do not believe in vice captains in any way, shape, or form, but especially two. That is the most ridiculous thing
I've
ever
heard.
That's
why we got rid of the vice captain of the podcast.
He didn't get voted into anything. He got voted out more than anything else. So,
it's
the best leaders we could think of. Like, there's one that stands out straight away in the NBL.
NBL.
Like, it's not even close for mine. Damian Martin is the guy. Like, it's you watch how he, I mean, it's, there's a lot of things about him that you sort of sit there and go, gee, that's impressive. The amount of times he's been cracked off the ball, just got up, shook it off, and he's back on the next play. Like, he just does everything. It just seems like the ultimate professional. And he's the sort of person you'd want to play for.
Sets a great example. Like, he sets an example that you would want every teammate, but also every person entering the program immediately take on.
No question. WNBL, Kelsey Griffin.
Friend
fantastic,
like,
friend of the show.
Friend
we have better on that usually does get you a little bit of a shout out on this, it turns out. Kelsey Griffin's an outstanding leader, and you sort of hear about the things that she went through at college and how that's translated into a WNBL career, and her career with the Opals as well. Fantastic leader, and again, people that you want to play with. It's a really high trait, I find.
Absolutely.
Our last one,
what do we got, Robbie?
Must be a competitor. Cannot be mailing this thing at any stage. You hear about all the stories, and Jordan's usually the biggest one, I find. But how many times do you hear guys that used to play with Jordan talk about, no, he just wanted to beat you at everything. Like, it didn't matter. Like, if you were walking to the car after the game, he wanted to get to his car before he got to your car. Like, he just found ways to turn everything into a competition, and he hated losing. Like, you want those sorts of people on your team. When things are bad, when things are tough, they find a way to go and get over the line.
Absolutely. And you, what you're hoping for, and this, I'll explain in a second, you're hoping it's not the first thing that is complimented to you about either yourself or the team that you're coaching. You don't want to speak to someone and go, damn, your guys or girls play really, really hard. Well, thanks, mate, but there's a whole heap of other things that we've just spoken about that you could also say we have great shooting ability, they're highly skilled, they play off both hands and feet. So you're hoping it's not the first thing that catches someone's eye, but you also know that it is the first thing, because without that, then the long-term success is probably going to be limited. And it is the one defining factor that, and competitiveness plays a little bit into resilience as well, because if you're competitive, you're not going to get knocked down, you're not going to let an injury sidetrack you. So it does play into that a little bit, but a competitive, like a serious competitor, is really going to make it work.
It is. So we've we throw a little shout out to our friends across the ditch here. When we start talking comparisons, Mika Vekona.
Unbelievable.
From New Zealand Breakers has been phenomenal over the years.
Yeah.
He's at Brisbane now, I think, actually.
Yeah.
NBL this year.
That's why he got mentioned on the pod.
It is. And Susie Bakovic from Townsville Fire. So two outstanding competitors in all facets of the game. Like, you can just tell they hate losing regardless. And regardless of what it is, I feel like you'd love to play with them. You always want to be on their team because they just try and find a way to win. They're never out of a contest.
No excuses.
Exactly.
Like, just look like they are just getting it done, regardless of.
Exactly. So it's funny. So we've gone seven traits. Of those seven traits, you know, how many of them are above the shoulders versus skill sets? Like, you look at it and it's like, well, okay, shooting, multi-skilled, athleticism are probably things that you can control with skill sets, but the rest of it, so IQ, resilience, mentality, leadership, and competitor are all things that are above the shoulders.
They are. I listened to a rival podcast this morning, Robbie. It was actually The Herd. Greg Jennings was on there, and he was describing, you know, NFL, you got 32 teams out there. The talent's generally equal on 32 teams. You got 1,600 and something players in the league. Like, the talent's generally there. 95% of it is above the shoulders. And if you think about these, kind of the last three in a bit that we spoke about, if you're a competitor, you will be setting your shooting score this evening at whatever it was. I made 60 out of 100 shots. If you're a competitor, you're back there the next day trying to get 61 out of 100. So you can see how a lot of these different abilities and things that we've described, they do play into each other as well.
Yeah, no question. So, and again, it's not to say that if you don't have those seven, you will not make it, because there are plenty of players out there that maybe tick four of the seven boxes or five of the seven boxes or whatever it is. But this is just our thoughts on, okay, what would a perfect athlete look like if we could get them?
And if you're a developing or evolving athlete, you will have some of these, and it will be your goal to get all of them. Like, these are not crazy off-the-wall things that nobody can get. We've got athletes in our program now, in our junior program, we're in our national pathway, that have got all of these things. So they are things where, as you develop from being a junior, from an under 12 athlete through to exiting junior basketball and into senior basketball, these are those things that you want to tick off and see how good you can get with all of them.
No, excellent. So that wraps us up for that portion, and we move into the weekend news now. So we've got a couple of topics, obviously.
Start off with the clinic on Monday, Robbie.
That was a big one. Big shout out to Peter Lonigan, the head of high performance coach development, who is in town on Monday night. Still the longest title in basketball. Was outstanding on Monday night. So we had about 89 coaches pack into Mulum Stadium on Monday night.
Awesome.
We had
new venue.
Another 32, I think it was, watch online as well.
Yep.
Which was outstanding. Something new that we've tried, and the feedback from that was pretty good as well, from all accounts. And we had some of our under 15 Southern Cross Challenge athletes on court.
Yep.
Topic was developing athletes through the use of small-sided games.
Yep.
Which, again, long topic, but highly valuable. And the feedback, it was great to see so many coaches from varying levels there as well. It wasn't just our VJBL coaches. There was a ton of domestic coaches that came in for the clinic. A heap of state team coaches as well that came into it, which is fantastic. And that's what you really want out of the clinics too, I think.
Kind of played into IQ and decision-making, Robbie. Small-sided games. Played into shooting ability, small-sided games. And then that international skill set. Like those three, that clinic there is essentially designed to influence three of the things that we just spoke about, the basketball things, on the floor things that we spoke about. It was awesome. The clinic is still online as well, so you can still jump on and purchase the clinic to watch as well.
You can. All details on the BV website through the coaching pages.
Yep.
Did drop one of the best quotes of all time.
What was it?
The on-ball screen is the crutch of the imbecile. I heard him say that in a clinic once before, and he dropped it again, which means it must be right. If you say something twice, it has to be on the money, and I do like that one.
Well done to our young bucks, to the under 15 boys, and thank you for coming out there. They did a great job.
That was fantastic. Seawall finals finished off last weekend, so big congratulations to Megan Moody up in Bendigo for getting the title with the Bendigo Braves up there. Did a fantastic
job. Low-scoring game, Robbie.
Low-scoring game. My God. It's like everyone turned the sliders down on 2K, and it's just, you cannot miss a shot.
Love it.
It was high-scoring game, but some big lines put up by some players too. It's, I know it's very hard to say Kelly Wilson without saying Gabe Richards and vice versa, but my Lord, were those two good on the weekend. Some 20
assists,
double-doubles.
20 assists in one game, Robbie. You might not have had 20 assists in your career.
Never.
Robbie.
That would require me to catch the ball and pass it to someone else without throwing it out of court. So, big shout out to them.
Stretch four.
Not even a stretch four. High post decoy, I feel like I was called most of the time. So, congratulations to those ladies, obviously, and Hobart Chargers, they got the win in the men's down on that side. That was a low-scoring game, though.
Lower-scoring game, Robbie, but really, really good job by them. They got some fantastic players. When you go and look at their roster, they got some studs on there. So they get that done. What would be really cool, Robbie, and I'm not sure when this stopped, but someone listening can get this done for us. Remember, maybe 10, 12 years ago, like the winner of all the leagues would go and play off in a tournament.
Would love that.
That would be outstanding. On the back of Melbourne Victory Soccer losing last night to a second division soccer team from Sydney. So props to the second division team. Awesome concept, though, to where like these pros can go and play at a venue in Sydney on a random Wednesday night. Awesome. That is awesome.
I did see something about the winnings they've got from that game will go towards their end-of-season trip.
Love it.
And they've just upgraded it,
love it,
significantly from that. But that might be a Talking Split initiative. Maybe we can have all
the
leagues. We have a history of tournament play on this podcast.
Love it.
Maybe we can look to go down that line as well.
The Talking Split tourney. Let's get that done.
We can do that.
Let's get that done.
Again, calling all sponsors. That would be fantastic if you want to back us in for this one. We can get something done there. Big V Champ finals kick off this weekend, obviously. VJBL finals are also on for the VJL leagues this Friday night. It is big shout out once again to the VJBL.
What happened?
For sending me down the ring road once again.
Where have you got to go?
Down in Werribeeville. Yes. Nothing new about that one. So
yes.
I'm very familiar with the ring road this season, as it turns out.
Love that, Robbie. Just take the Duncan's Road exit. Hey, so who's playing in the Big V this weekend? What have we got?
In the champ men's final, we have Eltham and Ringwood.
I would
predict Eltham get that one. 2-0.
Interesting.
Interesting. I'm fairly comfortable they'll win that one.
Okay.
The women, we have the Cinderella story of the Southern Penn Sharks, coached by a friend of the show who has also been on the podcast before.
Interesting.
Jared Hillier.
Mm-hmm.
And Kennedy Kariyama out there with the Sunbury Jets women as well.
Should be a good contest.
Southern Penn ladies have won in the last 20 seconds in both their last two games.
Last couple games. Couple buzzer beaters.
Yep. So down the stretch, they are
best
very
of three
solid.
Series,
I
both of them,
think
I think, really.
So I'm calling probably 2-1. I'll take Southern Penn in an upset.
Ooh,
on those ones.
Roberto.
Yeah. Well, you got to go with winning form is good form. I don't know that the weekend off suits anyone. NBA has done a stack of work in the mental health area over the last couple of weeks, and they've been really ahead of the time, I suppose. Jackie McMullen's put a couple of articles together on the ESPN website, which you're going to have a look at. The video as well on there, talking to Kevin Love about his anxiety and everything that goes with the mental health side. I think it's a really valuable conversation on the back of our chat with Dr. Grant Blaschke a few weeks ago.
Yep.
How's the callbacks on this podcast, incidentally?
We've
done fairly well on this, but a really good read. Paul Pierce is on there as well. Marcus Smart gets in on this as well. DeMar DeRozan. And it's really refreshing to see a whole heap of athletes talk about the mental health side of the game, because it is a trait, and you know, we talk about it all the time. There are scars and there are things that you can see. And Kevin Love mentions that when you break your hand, everyone knows it's broken. But when you might be slightly broken mentally, no one knows about that, and you sort of feel obligated to cover that up. So it's a great conversation to start having out there as well.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's on us, it's on coaches, it's on families, it's on everybody, administrators, to help get this right. Like, I think it is something that it's easily put in the too hard basket.
Yep.
But I saw last night, you know, the Dane Beam story. He was an outstanding football player. Father was ill, father passed away, he's got his brother there, but just how difficult a time something like that had on him and his family, and it led to, you know, he was the captain and, you know, gave up the captaincy, playing unbelievable football, but just how we deal with that as a sport and as a community is something that we can be good at.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed on Facebook a little while ago, Mark Worthington posted something as well about just retiring from NBL and being a massive part of his life.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's not there anymore, and transitioning from that ex-player into what's next. And, you know, everyone goes through transitions in their life, obviously. So I think it's a great conversation to keep having as well. College ball.
Interesting one, Robbie. The news today was that the RPI, which is the kind of the measurement of the success of the teams, or the standing, or the quality of the teams in the college, in the NCAA college basketball, has been scrapped. So there's a new measurement for success for these teams, which will be interesting to see how that plays out and how many of those teams will miss out on the NCAA tournament in March. We've got August 23, Robbie. These are kind of the the dark days. We're in winter over here in Australia, but so it's like the dark days of winter. August 23, right here. College basketball starts in, 2 months' time.
Yep.
NBA preseason will start in a couple of weeks' time. NBL preseason's kind of about to fire up. We just got to get through the next couple of weeks. Got footy on the finals. Footy starts in a couple of weeks. We can get through
for some of us. Finals footy.
Oh, sorry,
starts
mate.
In a couple
I didn't mean.
Weeks,
to, I didn't mean. I did not mean to say that. We just got to get through this next month, and then we will have a good 6 months worth of hoops to keep us occupied.
There's a glorious, glorious thing as well. So on that, if you do have any topics you'd like us to discuss on the Talking Split podcast, you can obviously just email those in, which would be fine. All my details on the BV website.
Yep.
Better off sending to me, not Mike. Mike only checks his email once a week.
Monday morning,
and that's it for the rest of the week. So if there are any topics you'd like us to discuss, please email those in. You can obviously get a hold of us on Twitter using the hashtag Talking Split. If you can subscribe to the podcast, that would be fantastic. Like, share, review, retweet. We'll only take a couple of seconds of your time. We do really appreciate it in getting this product out there every week. We do appreciate the listeners
absolutely.
For jumping in as well.
Robbie, I think it is safe to say these things are going smoother. than they did previously.
Well, you can hear us both for a start.
Yeah.
And as it turns out in podcasting, the audio is
100%
of the product, it turns out. So we might be due for a call into Shula fairly soon, actually.
Yeah, maybe an impromptu. Funny. Well, he has just rang. No kidding. I got four voicemails from Shula at 2:21. Yeah, 2:41. He knows we record on a Thursday afternoon, and he's tried to call me to try and put us off. And
no question.
It has not happened.
Not at all. This has been one of the best podcasts we've ever put out.
We've done well.
No edits required from my end, which I really appreciate. So thanks to all our listeners for jumping in. Thanks for talking Split with us, and we'll catch you guys next week.